You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Well, guys, it's Wednesday night, and you know what that means on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. It's time for just another sports podcast with me, Kyle Barber, and my co-host from Lasker, North Carolina, the head coach of Northeast Academy, Mr. Stevie Fly. Stevie, how you doing?
Doing good, bud. How about you?
Could be better, man. We'll get into that in a minute, but first I want to welcome in our guest, the legendary defensive coordinator from East Carolina University, amongst other places like Kentucky and Cincinnati, et cetera, et cetera. Mr. Rick Smith. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, and legendary means I'm old.
No, there's a lot of old people that aren't legendary. They're just old.
Exactly.
They're just old. You on the other hand, have done some things that people remember.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I've enjoyed my 9 years coaching here. Well, I enjoyed 8 years coaching here. Last year was tough.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I know which year you're talking about, but I want before we get into that, as I'm transparent always here on the show about my health, everybody that listens to any of our content knows that I had my 6 month CT scan to make sure I was still cancer free yesterday, and got good results on that, and my Signatera DNA cancer screening, no circulating cancer in my DNA. So from between that and the CT scan, that's great news. And so I appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers, because I know everybody, all the listeners out there were, you know, praying for me. So I wanted to say I appreciate that. Now we'll quit talking about me, and we're going to talk some Pirate football with Coach Smith. Coach, so we'll start at not at the beginning of your career, because we'd have to go back a ways. But
they had gasoline cars.
We'll start. And, so you got hired by Skip. Was it January of 05, December 04? Exactly. Do you remember exactly when you got hired by Skip?
Yeah. I'd worked at Cincinnati. I was the defensive coordinator of Cincinnati, and Greg Hudson was a running back coach at Cincinnati. And when I went up for the interview at Cincinnati, Greg and I sitting around the bar that night after the interview, and he says, you know, I was linebacker at Notre Dame. I'd love to be on defense. And I said, well, if I can get you on defense, I'll get you on defense. And so Greg was the running back coach at Cincinnati when they hired me as the defensive coordinator, and I talked coach into moving him over to defense, and of course we just really hit it off well, and Greg and I were there 2 years.
Was that under Rick Minner?
Yes, under Coach Minner, and I can tell you some great stories about that 2 years.
What years were they?
I think it was 98, 99.
Gino Gadulli. Was Gino quarterback yet?
He was there, but he wasn't starting.
Okay. So that was kind of right before Rick kind of got things rolling a little bit there.
Yeah. We went to a bowl game. I think we went to bowls both years. I know we played went to the Motor City Bowl.
Okay. You played Marshall in the Motor City Bowl, if I remember right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, it was 2000, I believe.
Yeah. We went there in 99.
Okay. And so you, that's how you met HUD.
And, so I met HUD. And how I got here, it's a good story. Greg, you know, Coach Holt called Greg Hudson about hiring, you know, because Greg and Coach Holtz played together at Notre Dame, and they were very good friends. And so Coach called Greg and asked him if he would you know, come to Cincinnati. And he said, I'll come if you hire Rick Smith. And of course, Skip said, who in the hell's Rick Smith? So anyway, Skip said he would, and Skip called me, and I came up for the interview. And of course, you know, he hired me, and it was a great 5 years with Skip. you know, he was good to work for, really was.
So you got here, and I thought, well, talk about, I do want to talk about briefly, you coaching in Europe with Steve Logan.
Yeah.
So what was that like, and how, I mean, obviously, you've been around college football for years, you were aware of East Carolina, but did Coach Logan talk about ECU much when he was in Europe? And what was it like working with Coach Logan before he dived back into Skip?
It was great. I didn't know Steve very well. You know, he knew who I was, and I knew who he was. And we were in Orlando for 7 days when we did the draft, just like the NFL does. You know, the teams were in different towns, and we had the draft. And then we were in Tampa for 5 weeks and practiced there with the team. And we would scrimmage every Wednesday in the Tampa Stadium, and we scrimmaged every Saturday, a different team. Then we went to Europe, and gosh, we'd been in Europe, I guess it was the first week. We were there 2 weeks before the first game, and we practiced, you know, and we had a big scrimmage on Saturday. And that Sunday night, I'm in my room, and I hear some guy walking down the halls playing a guitar and singing. And he knocks on my door, and I open the door, and it was Coach Logan, Steve. And Steve said, boy, it's about time we got to know each other. So we became best of friends. And, of course, we were in the press box together, you know, because neither one of us were coordinators. We were just, you know, on the staff, but the truth be known, I was the D coordinator and he was the offensive coordinator. But we had a great time. It was fun. We jogged together, had a few beers together. He was one of a kind.
Now, Coach Lux was known for like to play a little blues guitar. Do you play instrument at all, Coach?
Me? No, sir. I don't.
No. So you just had to listen to Coach Logan play his guitar.
Yes.
Okay.
So I did win the course award when I was in the ninth grade.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was in the course with about 100 people. I won the course award.
Oh, as a group award?
No, I won it by myself. I was the best guy in the course.
Really?
Yeah.
Coach Smith got a singing voice. Okay.
Yeah.
End of the show, if everybody sticks around, we're going to get Coach Smith to sing us a song.
My course teacher didn't particularly like me getting it because she made the comment that I would like for next year whoever gets the course award to be the best singer, not the best athlete.
Are you saying this is a popularity vote?
Yeah, that's what it became. I found out years later, I found out that I guess it was my 10 or 20 year reunion. I asked some of the girls that were in the course because they came up to me and said, I said, well, what the heck went on when I got that course award? She said, well, we all planned it as a joke on Miss Bradford. I said, well, she didn't think it was very funny.
Coach, I thought you were about to tell me all the girls voted for you could have liked you.
Nah, that wasn't it.
That wasn't it? Okay. Well, your wife's there, ain't she?
Yeah, I can't talk about that.
Okay. So, we 05, you come here with Skip and with Coach Hudson. You get here and John Thompson was here. What was your first assessment of East Carolina when you got here as a university, as a football program, and the talent you had to work with when you first got here? I know you guys built that talent up in a hurry, but when you first got here, what did you think of what you had to work with?
Well, it's like anywhere any program, in order to win, the number one thing you got to have is linemen on both sides of the ball. And they're the hardest thing to find. There's just not enough big offensive linemen to go around, and there's not enough fast, big defensive linemen to go around on defense. And that was where the program was really lacking was, you know, what's up front's what matters. And that's where we were were pretty, pretty thin. But, you know, all of us being in coaching, and a lot of us were in some programs that, you know, where you had to build them. And what we started doing was we went out and signed tall kids that could run that we felt like that we could put weight on, you know, and that's kind of how we built it. And Skip was just really involved with the offense. Didn't bother us much on defense. Of course, he and Greg Hudson, you know, were very, very close. They played together at Notre Dame, and he pretty much left us alone. And I got real close to Greg, and it was a great 4 years with Skip. Well, that was even the one that, even the first year we didn't have a winning season, but the kids really bought in, and that really busted their rear end. I think we won 4 or 5 that year, and then the next four years we had winning season. I think we went to 4 bowl games with Skip.
That's right, and you won 5 the first year, and it felt like a winning season because we had been so bad under John Thompson. When you guys came in, you know, I remember the first game against Duke, you know, and Duke, you know, was horrible at that time, but they were still an ACC school. And I remember coming into Greenville, they were 7-point favorites. And, you know, just you guys beating Duke, you had a great defensive performance in that game. Beating Duke to start it really got things off on the right track. Because you know now, you probably didn't know then, but you know now what it means to East Carolina fans to beat an ACC school.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can remember just like it was yesterday, because I always go out and walk the field, you know, an hour and a half before the game, and I sit on the bench and just kind of, you know, spend some time out there out of the locker room. And I can remember going out, and I'm out there about an hour before the kickoff, and it was just a beautiful day. And the east side of the stadium was half full. And then I can remember at halftime walking in and saying, these people are louder here than they were at Alabama. I just thought that the fans at East Carolina were as good as anywhere, you know, I'd coached. And that includes Alabama. They're just great. You know, and then we started winning and filled it up. And it was a great – that was – all those years were probably as much fun as I had coaching. Was those 4 years with Skip, and of course now I loved Ruff with McNeil. I thought he got screwed at the end.
Oh, he did, and we'll get to that. And I'm glad you said that, because boy, we're still trying to recover from that. But you talk about your relationship with Coach Hudson, and you know, you guys becoming friends in Cincinnati when you guys were on the staff together. And I guess you were more of a mentor to him at that time, him being quite a bit younger than you. So how was the transition where you were technically, he was your, you know, Skip was the boss, but he was the defensive coordinator, you were secondary coach. Was there a transition with you having to, quote unquote, take orders from Coach Hudson, or was it never like that?
It was never like that. It was always a mutual, what do you think? And it wasn't just, I mean, the whole staff. I mean, we all got along, and Greg gave everybody input, and I mean, Greg was funny. I mean, he said, Rick, I don't know nothing about secondary. And I tell him, Greg, I don't know anything about linebackers, so let's just get together. But he let me, I called all the coverages, you know, which would fit the fronts that he called. And, you know, it was a great 5 years with him.
Yeah, no doubt. And you had a lot of great players come through there, and a lot of other great coaches. Talk about somebody we lost. Talk about your relationship with Coach Rock Rogerman.
Golly, Rock was just a great guy. we got to be really close because we were both, you know, we were just assistants. We weren't head coaches or coordinators. We were just 2 assistants. And the first, you know, that first 4 months we were here, we all lived down at that motel across from, I can't remember where it was, but yeah, the City Hotel is what it was called back then, I guess. But we all stayed there, and Rock and I stayed there a month after everybody else's family got here. I didn't move my family till my kids got out of school, but Rock and I we ate breakfast together every day, and we lifted weights together. He wasn't much of a jogger. I jogged, but then we ate Steve and Mill together, and we just got to be really close. And I guess the one of the saddest days was when we all flew up for his funeral. You know, Skip and Greg and I and all the coaches flew up for his funeral.
Yeah, how is that losing somebody? I mean, I'm trying to word this right. Losing somebody that's part of your staff like that, but it's also family, and the players have to deal with it. You know, knowing he's sick. How difficult is that?
Well, he's probably the toughest human being I've ever known. I mean, you know, he coached that year sick,
yeah.
And he really never showed it. I mean, he was just that tough of a human being, he was really tough. He was religious. He was a man of God, and his players loved him, and they played their rear ends off for him. And he and Greg Hudson were just as close as, you know, two people could be. I mean, they were close. Of course, you know, they were close to Skip because all of them were at Notre Dame together.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough loss, and everybody. I hope everybody in Pirate Nation remembers Rock. I know I do, and I think most fans do. If you ever met him, he couldn't forget him. He was very, very boisterous, very outgoing, and great guy.
Amen.
So we'll fast forward a little bit to the back-to-back conference championship seasons, 08 and 09. You know, the D-line was loaded, the linebacker was loaded, and the secondary was loaded. You know,
yeah.
you had guys like Van Eskridge. You know, one guy, and, you know, we'll talk about the season, but I do want to talk about this guy. Emmanuel Davis. Yeah. I remember him playing for you, and I remember thinking this kid – and he ended up having a nice career in the CFL. But I remember thinking this kid was going to be one of the all-time greats at East Carolina to ever play the position. And – When the transition happened, and Ruff's first defense coordinator came in, and we did a lot of man coverage. He seemed to just not excel in man coverage the way he did in your zone coverages.
He did not have great speed. You know, just flat out speed. He had great quickness, and he was a, you know, really good football player. He had to grow up a lot. He came in here and thought he was all world and was spoiled rot and didn't want to work hard. And I can remember on the practice field toward the I guess it's the east end zone, I grabbed him by the shoulder pads and started shaking him and told him, I said, if you're not going to stick your head in there and bow your neck and tackle like the hell I'm trying to teach you, then you can just go home. he took his helmet off, threw it on the ground, started walking to the locker room, took his jersey off, threw it on the ground, shoulder pads. And about that time, Greg Hudson ran over and Greg's picking it up, walking behind him, picking it up. And Jed told him, he said, you ain't quitting, boy.
good cop, bad cop.
He said, turn your rear end around and get back over there and do what Coach Smith says. And after that, never had another problem with him. And, you know, we sat down after practice and talked. And, you know, I apologized to him if I'd been too rough on him. And he said, no, Coach, you know, I needed it. And I've just got to grow up. And that was kind of his attitude. He kind of blamed himself. And after that, never had another problem with him. He busted his rear end and became one heck of a good football player.
Yeah, yeah. Had a great career. Is he still playing in the CFL? I don't even know. I know for a while, one time he was one of the top secondary players in the Canadian Football League.
Well, he was just a very smart football player. You know, now he didn't play defense in high school. He was quarterback.
He played from was he from Manio?
Yeah. He was starting quarterback at Manio. You know, they'd play him on defense a little bit. But that's kind of what I would do. You know, I was a high school coach for 10 years before I became a college coach, and I always put my best athlete at quarterback. And when I was recruiting all the years I coached in college, I always almost all the players that I signed out of the state of Florida were high school quarterbacks and high school wide receivers, because most high school coaches put their best players on offense. And it's good because, you know, they never played much defense, so you didn't have to, you know, correct a lot of stuff that they'd been taught wrong.
That's an interesting aspect. That's an interesting way to look at it. You know, they're good athletes. You know, they can play ball, and then you can teach them to play the way you want them to play. That's a good approach. I like that.
You know, I mean, where you, as a high school coach, which I was for 10 years, I put my best athletes.
Yeah.
My best athlete was a quarterback because I was an option head coach, and then my other best player was a tailback. I mean, that's the kids I recruited to play in the secondary. When I would recruit the Panhandle of Florida, that's the first thing I would watch was the quarterbacks, especially back in the, you know, when everybody's running the option. You know, your best athlete's a quarterback because he's either going to pitch it or keep it. And most all great defensive backs that go to the NFL in high school, they were either quarterbacks in the option days or they were tailbacks.
So, we looking at that 08 season, as you went into it, did you know that we could be good? And I mean, you look at the injuries on that football team. Yeah, we could have been even better than we were. But did you know you had a defense good enough to win a conference championship going into the 08 season?
We felt like we did. We were a little bit, as always, we were worried about the defensive line, you know, depth-wise.
Right.
And, you know, the two hardest things to recruit on defense is D linemen and corners, you know, cornerbacks.
Right.
You know, especially if you want to be able to play man-to-man. And we were not where we wanted to be at the time at one of the corner positions, and we weren't really where we wanted to be depth-wise on defensive line. We had two or three kids that we felt like were really good, but if those kids went down, we were hurting.
So
Hey, Kyle, Emmanuel Davis, he retired in 2018. His last year they won the great with the Calgary Stampeders.
All right, went out a great cup champion. All right.
All right, let's go back a little bit. I'm sorry, Kyle. Let's go
ahead,
Stevie. Go back a little bit. Talk about, as a defensive coach, how it was trying to handle Dwayne Harris and Chris Johnson in practice.
It was tough, especially in the spring. you know, during the season, we didn't hit them very much.
Right.
If we did, we'd have got fired. And to be honest with you, if any of our kids had hit any one of those guys, I would have fired them.
Yeah.
You know, that was, you know, we would tackle with Skip. We would, Monday might be, you know, one series live offense and one series live, like the one defense would go against the two offense, you know, maybe six plays live. Then we'd switch it and the second team defense would go against that first offense for six or seven plays. And then we would do that again on Wednesday. And on Wednesday, he would put the ball on the 4-yard line and give the offense three downs to score. If they scored, the defense had to run sprints. And if the defense held them, then the offense had to run. And out of the 12 weeks we did it, the defense had to run one time.
All right. There you go. You handled Chris Johnson and Dwayne Harris and all the other playmakers. I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted here. People are sending me text messages. I should be doing this from a computer, not a phone. So back in the 08 season, I wanted to touch on that some more. Early in the year, the Pirates obviously beat Virginia Tech in Charlotte. And then the following week, West Virginia comes to Greenville, ranking in the top 10. And you guys just smothered them on defense. What do you remember about that game? Besides the obvious aftermath with the fans on the field and the altercation with the cops, which thankfully didn't involve the coaches and the players. But what do you remember about that game upsetting West Virginia, ranked in the top 10?
Well, it's been a few years ago. I remember, you know, how excited we were after the game was over. And usually when the game's over, I'm just glad it's over, you know, because there's just so much preparation as a coach you put in and you're so tired. And a lot of times when the kids would rush the field and the fans would come out, you know, I would just take a knee somewhere and get out of the way and watch because I was just glad that it was over. But it was a great win. And I was happier for the players, you know, than I was for myself or any of the fans because, you know, they're the ones that do all the work and, you know, they're the ones that catch all the crap when we don't play well.
But, right, absolutely.
That was I guess if I had to list, you know, five of the greatest wins in my career, that would definitely be probably in the top three.
Do you know the other ones off the top of your head?
When I was at Georgia Tech, we beat Auburn at Auburn. That was a great win. When I was at Georgia Tech, we beat Georgia at Georgia. And it was the first time that Georgia Tech had beat Georgia in like 20-something years at their place.
Wow. Well, that West Virginia game's in good company then. You know, beating Georgia at their place, that's a pretty big deal then. It'd be even bigger deal now.
Yeah. So, Vince Dooley was the head coach then, Coach Dooley.
At Georgia Tech.
Vince Dooley was at Georgia.
At Georgia, okay.
Bill Curry was the head coach at
– At Georgia Tech, that's right. Could you coach with Bill Curry at Georgia Tech out – You coached with him at Georgia Tech and Kentucky. You didn't coach with him at Alabama, did you?
No, I was at Alabama with Ray Perkins.
Okay.
And when Ray Perkins left and went to the NFL, Coach Curry, I talked to Coach Curry about helping me get a job because he didn't know he was going to be the Alabama head coach. Well, Coach called Baylor, Coach Grant Taft for me, and Grant Taft hired me at Baylor because of Coach Curry. And I'm there about a week or two over recruiting in Waco. And Coach Curry calls me and says, I just got the Alabama job. Would you come back to Alabama? And I said, Coach, I would love to come back to Alabama, but I just can't do Coach Taft that way. And he said, well, I knew you wouldn't come, but I knew you'd be mad at me if I didn't ask. So I stayed at Baylor with Coach Taft for 3 years, and Coach Curry got the job at Kentucky, and he hired me at Kentucky.
I would imagine that probably made a bigger impression on him in a positive way, the fact that you turned him down and stayed at Baylor.
Well, you know, I wanted really bad to go back. My wife hadn't even moved yet, and my three kids in school, you know, they were all still in Tuscaloosa, and I'm in a motel room on the third floor in Waco by myself. But, you know, you just can't. Coach Taft hired me when I didn't have a job. And, you know, I couldn't go in and just tell him, hey, man, I'm going back to Alabama.
No, it speaks to your integrity. And like I said, yeah. If I was Bill Curry, that would, you know, and it did stick with him when he got the job at Kentucky, you know, a few years later and you needed the job, he hired you.
Yeah, I told him when he called me, I said, well, Coach, from what I can tell, Kentucky's only 600 miles from Tallahassee, Florida, where I'm from, and I'm 1,200 miles now.
A little bit closer to home. I'm going to move back to ECU a little bit. The 09 season, back-to-back conference championships. You know, you had guys like Van Eskridge, et cetera, on that football team. Talk about Van Eskridge, great safety. You know, I remember He got the pick. Everybody remembers him getting the pick in the Houston game to seal the conference championship, but people forget he did the same thing the year before in the Tulsa game to seal the conference championship.
Well, Van was when we signed him, he was a safety.
Yep.
And not many people were recruiting him. And he was just so aggressive. We actually moved him down closer to the line of scrimmage like a rover. And he was actually more like a down safety outside linebacker than he was, you know, a secondary player. But I was coaching. He was like the nickel back, you know.
Right.
He would line up like we were 4-3 defense, and like we had, you know, we had the four down linemen and the two true linebackers and five DBs. And he was what I called a tweener. He was kind of between a safety and a linebacker.
Right.
He was a good enough athlete to be a safety, but he was tough enough and mean enough and physical enough to be an outside linebacker. And, of course, you know, he's a high school coach now.
Yeah, I did not know that. Where's he coaching? Yeah.
He's coaching somewhere west of here, kind of down above Charlotte.
Okay. So kind of in our talked to him earlier, Bubba Rosenbaum, who does a lot of work on the podcast. He's in that area. So, but yeah, Van, everybody will remember Van Eskridge for the interception against Houston to seal the conference championship and, you know, two straight for you guys. So you go with Skip to South Florida. Things don't work out down there. Coach Ruffin McNeil, you know, gets the job here. In 2012, we win 8 games, but the defense is struggling. He decides to make a change. You know, there's a lot of conversations with Coach Hudson. We're going to bring back Coach Hudson, Coach Smith. I think maybe Hud decided to go to Purdue. I can't remember exactly what happened with that. But you end up getting the job. I remember hearing that you interviewed, when I interviewed you before Professor O'Cools, I remember you talking about you interviewing with Ruffin and didn't think you got the job.
Well, I was actually, when the whole staff got fired at South Florida, Barbara and my wife and I were driving back. We didn't sell our house here in Greenville. My daughter and son moved into the house, and Billy, my son, finished school here at ECU. And I said, Barbara, are we going to retire in Greenville, or are we going to retire in Tallahassee where we're from? And she said, we're going to retire where the kids are. And I said, nobody's going to hire a 69-year-old secondary coach. And because I was 69 that year. And hung the phone up. The phone rang, and it was Terry Holland. And this was the 26th of December, day after Christmas. And we're driving back from Tampa. And the phone rang, and it was Terry. And he said, Coach Smith. I said, yeah. He said, this is Terry Holland. I said, Coach Holland, how are you doing? He said, I'm doing good. He said, would you be interested in coming back to East Carolina? I said, yes, sir. I'd be real glad to come back. I said, not many people going to hire a 69-year-old secondary coach. And so that's how I got hired back here with Ruff. I didn't even – Coach McNeil thought that Terry told me I had the job. And I thought I was – as soon as I got back here, I got back here that night on the 26th, I thought I would hear something on the 27th. I didn't hear anything from Ruffin or Terry Holland for a week. I was on pins and needles. And I said, well, I told Barbara, I said, well, they didn't hire me. I guess, you know, we'll be – you know, I'll be retired at 69. And about that time, the phone rang, and it was Ruff. And he said, where are you at? I said, I'm here in Greenville at my house. He said, how long will it take you to get to the office? I said, how long before you want me to be there? He said, get here as soon as you can. So I jumped in the car and got there, and we hit it off, and he hired me, and he was great to work for.
Yeah, you come in at 13. What are your impressions of Lincoln Riley? I mean, you're coaching against that Lincoln Riley offense. Lincoln's done pretty well for himself. I think he can buy himself a cheeseburger when he needs to. So yeah. What was your first impression of a young Lincoln Riley?
I thought Lincoln, and I think the people that don't know Lincoln, Lincoln is a very down to earth, just a good human being. He's not stuck up. He doesn't think he's, you know, I mean, he's just a good dude. When he went to Oklahoma, I guess it was maybe a month or two after he got to Oklahoma, he called me, and I'm not bragging or anything. I'm telling this little story so everybody know what kind of person Lincoln Riley is. But Lincoln called me and he said, I just want to thank you for helping me get to Oklahoma. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we played great defense and that really helped the offense. He said, I just want to thank you for, you know, for what you did, you know, on the staff. And, you know, we got along great. And you and Ruff got along great. I mean, it was a great staff.
Yeah. I don't know if people realize, how bad the defense was in 2012, you know, because we won 8 games. And I don't think people realize the turnaround you guys had on defense in 2013 because the offense was so high-powered.
Yeah.
But there was times in 2013 where you guys absolutely shut people down.
A lot of people didn't even know it because they don't care about defense. We only gave up 17 points a game that year.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, we were a fantastic football team, 10-win season. You know, I think the one disappointment would have been the Marshall game, but that was a nightmare. You played NC State on Saturday. You beat NC State in Raleigh. Then you got to turn around and be emotionally up to play on a short week, Thanksgiving week, noon on Black Friday, in Huntington, West Virginia, to try to win the East Division of Conference USA. That game was just set up for failure. But thankfully, you guys bounced back, win the bowl game, get a 10-win season, and people, another thing, Ruffin and this staff, you included, don't get enough credit. Look, there's been exactly 2 teams that have won 10 games at East Carolina. Mm-hmm. One was the Peach Bowl team everybody talks about. The other was that 2013 team.
Yeah. And that was a fun year.
Yeah, I'll beat UNC and NC State in the same year. Never been done before in Greenville. 2014, first year in the American, you guys finished 8-5 after the bowl game. At one point, like that year, we may make the BCS, or I don't even remember what it was called at that point, but, you know, the tough performance at Temple. But, and then we'll look at the 2015 season where I really think, you know, before the season, we had Ben Kirk, and, you know, he gets hurt, and we're kind of, you know, we have what we have at quarterback, and, you know, that offense, you know, first year without Lincoln Riley, Dave Nickel was a good coach. He had a good staff. He had a great offensive staff, had a great good defensive staff. And, you know, the quarterback situation, the Pirates finished 1 game short of making a bowl game, lose to Cincinnati on a field goal. There was a lot of games that year where the defense really carried things.
Yeah.
And, you know, then Jeff Confer makes the decision, while you guys are out recruiting on the road, to fire Ruffin McNeil, and which of course meant that, well, no, it didn't mean that you were out of a job. You still had a job. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just talk about your reaction when you heard that Confer had fired Ruffin. Were you guys suspecting that at all, or
no.
Did it completely blindside you?
You know where Ruff was at when you got the call?
I know he was recruiting, but I don't know where.
He was with me. Sitting in my car outside of one of the best schools in Greensboro, North Carolina, Dudley High School. We had just got through visiting with the kid at Dudley High School, and he got the call, and I drove him from Greensboro back to Charlotte, because we'd been in Charlotte the day before recruiting. I drove him back to his car, you know, there in Charlotte, and he had to drive from Charlotte back to Greenville. And I remember when he got in his car, he hugged my neck and said that, I think I'm going back to be fired. Mm. You know, so he kind of knew it.
Ridiculous. Well, one of the most ridiculous decisions, I think, you know, a lot of people will discuss, you know, what was the worst decision, firing him or Logan. You know, I think it's firing Ruffin. Ruffin had done nothing but win. And that season, you know, we were 1 game below 500. And what's amazing to me, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, I know the staff off the top of my head. If you look at where everybody, you know, Donnie Kirkpatrick's the offensive coordinator here now, has been for a few years. He was on that staff. Garrett Riley was receivers coach. He's the OC at Clemson now. The O-line coach, whose name escapes me, I believe he's the O-line coach at Arkansas now. You know, it's amazing to me that Ruffin got fired. So when you made the decision to stay, after Ruffin got fired. How hard of a decision was that for you? I mean, I know you wanted to stay in Greenville, so that part made it a little easier. But what was your first interaction with Scotty Montgomery like?
It was great. You know, Scotty called me and asked me to come down and meet him. I went down to the office and we visited. The next day, I drove him two or three high schools southwest of here off of Interstate 95, you know, just visiting recruits. And, you know, we talked while we were going. We talked coming back and got along great. I liked Scotty Montgomery as a person. I just thought that he was too young to be a head football coach, didn't have enough experience. After spring football practice, I knew we were going to be in trouble. I was always kind of old school when it came to, you know, taking on blocks and tackling at practice. But during spring practice, we were getting after it pretty good. You know, my kids tackling. And he came over there and he kind of did his finger at me, come over here, I want to talk to you. And he said, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing? He said, you're going to kill him. I said, coach, if I'm not wrong, you know, football is a contact sport. We're tackling 3 yards apart. How in the hell am I going to hurt somebody tackling 3 yards apart? Well, you can't do that. I said, if I can't do that, we can't win. He came back over there about a week later. We were practicing stalk blocking, you know, full speed, again, about 3 yards apart. He said, I told you the other day you couldn't do that. I said, I've been coaching for 45 years, and I'm too dang old to change. And so you can have my job. I resigned right there. And he asked me to stay until the end of the season. So I stayed till the end of the season.
Now, what I want to know, you know, he coached at Duke under Coach Cutcliffe. And Coach Cut been around a lot of winning football. There's no way Coach Cutcliffe ran practices that way.
No, I know Coach Cutcliffe. I remember when he was at Tennessee, I was at Georgia Tech.
So did he just learn that from his time in the NFL?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
It's not going to work because those guys in the NFL already know how to do it. You in college, you're still developing talent.
And I tell you the other thing I thought, and again, don't get me wrong, Scotty Montgomery is as good a human being as there is, but he was too young to be a head coach, didn't have the experience that he needed at the time, I don't know if he was intimidated by somebody my age. You know, all I did was try to help, but I think he took it the wrong way. Maybe I handled it the wrong way. I was, you know, I just told him, I said, we're not at Alabama where maybe you don't have to tackle at practice. I said, but the kids we have to do things live like a game, to get these kids better. I said, we don't sign, 350-pound offensive lineman. We don't sign 6'6", 220-pound linebackers. We sign kids that are smaller, and we have to put weight on them. We have to get them strong, and we have to do things at practice. Maybe you don't have to do it in Alabama or Tennessee. You know, and he didn't understand that.
Yeah. It still boggles my mind because of him being at Duke. I would imagine they would have to do things similar at Duke they do here. So that really is puzzling to me. I know his NFL background, and, you know, I wanted Scotty to be successful. Everybody did because he was the head coach at East Carolina. You know, all of us, not all of us, but the majority of the fans hated to see Ruffin go. But, you know, we gave Scotty a chance. And when it didn't work, boy, it went downhill fast. And I think Scotty also fell victim to a lot of crossfire that was aimed at Jeff Confort, and Scotty was kind of caught in the middle.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. And again, you know, And I wish Scotty Montgomery all the luck in the world. And I regret some of the things that,
if you're new here,
you know, the way I handle things, you know, around him.
I literally have
well, you know, you had been successful. It's hard to tell somebody who's been doing something as long as you've been doing it that you need to do it differently, and particularly when you know the way you're doing it is the right way.
Well, too, you know, I wasn't the defensive coordinator either.
True.
He wanted me to be the defensive coordinator, but I was getting older, and I loved coaching the secondary, and I just kind of wanted to coach my guys and let somebody else be the hero and make the right calls on Saturday. And, you know, the young man that he made the coordinator, Kenwick, did a good job, but he had never been a coordinator before, and I tried to help Kenwick, and he didn't really want my help, and he really didn't want anybody else's help, and he tried to do it all by himself, and that got him in trouble. And of course now he's been very successful since he left here, and I think he learned a lot you know, while he was here. And you know, I was just trying to help, but I didn't come across like I should have, you know, to help him.
So how
about me? Kyle, I want to go back a little bit with Coach Smith. Talk a little bit about one of my favorite linebackers at ECU, Zeke Bigger. Talk a little bit about Zeke, how he was.
He was a killer. Yeah. He loved to play the game. He could have played football 24 hours a day.
I believe that.
And you can have the college education. He didn't like going to class.
He just wanted to play ball. And what a great name, Zeke Bigger. I mean,
that name sticks out.
Yeah, he worked really, really hard on the field. He was great in the weight room. He was a leader in the weight room. He was an encourager, you know, that type of leader, led by example, but wasn't much on class. But I guess after a few early morning 5 a.m.s, he figured he better go to class.
we got a question in here from a comment. Robert Diedrich wanted to know, when you get a chance, can Coach talk about his relationship with Donnie Kirkpatrick and maybe Donnie's offensive philosophy?
Well, I really like Donnie Kirkpatrick, and I think Donnie's a really, really good football coach. I hate all the criticism that he's getting right now. I think they lost,
24-17.
We lost 5 or 6 kids on offense.
Okay.
We got 5 returners on offense? 4. We only got, I think we got 4 starters back on offense. And I think offense is harder to teach than defense. I think Donnie's a damn good football coach. I hate all the criticism that he's taking now, but I think there's enough blame to go around for everybody. I think the main problem is, I know last year, I keep up with East Carolina, and we have not recruited well at certain positions, especially the offensive line.
Yep.
And I was really shocked last year. I don't think we signed but 3 offensive linemen. And I think when your offense is not real good, I think you need to look at the offensive line. And I think when your defense is not real good, you need to look at the defensive line and the corners. But I think Donnie Kirkpatrick's as good an offensive coach as I've ever worked with, and I coached 50 years.
Yeah, I'm with you on the offensive line. From a talent standpoint, I think we've not done a great job there in recruiting. And also at receiver, we have some talent at receiver, but we do not have as much talent at receiver as we should. Considering the amount of good receivers that have came through East Carolina over the years, that is one position I've never seen us not have talent at.
And, well, we can run at wide receiver. We just can't catch.
Yeah. Kind of important.
Yeah, that might be.
All them guys need to be over there playing cornerback.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the guy that seems to have the best hands this year so well, the kid that transferred here from Colorado, he needs to get some size on him. He's got a good vertical, and he can catch the ball. I think he's got a bright future, redshirt freshman. But, you know, from in your opinion, just, you know, from what you think, the system that we're running offensively, do you think that's what Donnie would prefer to run, or do you think that's more what Mike Houston wants him to run?
Well, I haven't coached with Donnie in 5 years. I know Donnie's always wanted to try to establish the run first and, you know, pass off the run. Of course, you know, the game's changed. Everybody's in the one back stuff and, you know, slinging it every down. And but I think we've got pretty good receivers, but they don't catch the ball as well as they used to. Quarterback situation is, I sat here and watched games last year, and I said, we'd get a lead, and I said, why don't we play the young quarterbacks? I mean, we just, these quarterbacks we're playing with now, the only experience they have is this year.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, I guess I'm being critical, but just as a, you know, when you're a fan, you can be critical. And
right.
I'm no longer coaching, I'm a fan.
But, do you have a relationship with Mike Houston?
Don't know Coach Houston very well. Met him one of those meetings they had when he first got here. He came up, and I was doing the radio show at the time, and I was doing the Pirate Radio show. And I did it, you know, last 2 years Montgomery was here.
Yeah.
And I was never critical of the coach, and all I did was give stats. So, you know, in order to win, you need to be able to rush for at least 100 yards a game, you know, average at least 2.9 yards per carry, you know, three, you know, that kind of stuff. And I said, well, we only rushed for 24 yards, so we've got our butt beat. And we gave up 469 yards rushing, so we got our butt beat. That was the kind of the way that I did the radio show. And then Coach Houston came up to me and said, I hope you're not going to be real critical of me. I said, well, you don't need to be telling the quarterback club members that I'm a complete idiot like Scotty did.
Oh.
But anyway, so, but no, I was always, you know, I did the radio show, I think, a couple of years when Coach Houston was here. But the first 2 years he was here, or the first year he was here anyway. But I just try to give stats. I mean, you know, okay, the offense, like this last game, or so far the season, our offense is passing for 52%. They're completing 52% of the passes for 170 yards. We're rushing for 3.9 yards per carry, 135 yards a game, 305 yards total. But we've thrown 7 picks and we fumbled the ball. We've had 8 turnovers in 5 ball games, but we're not getting, and we've only got 9 turnovers. We should have 15 turnovers. So those are the kind of things I talk about.
Yeah, and how do you, you know, from watching it this year, how would you evaluate the offensive line in terms of progression from game one to game five? Have you seen much progression from the offensive line? And how long do you think it would take, you know, without knowing the personnel personally, for this line to gel?
Well, if I remember correctly, they lost out of the 5 linemen, they lost 3 of them.
Yeah.
So they only had 2 coming back. By now, after spring practice and 5 games, you would think that they were gelling, you know, better than they are. We're just not. Of course, I look at the stats, you know, I looked at the stats today, you know, the offense is averaging 3.9 yards per run, which is not terrible. I mean, that's pretty good, I think. And I think they should be completing their passes. They're only completing 52% of the passes. And this day and time, if you're only throwing for 170 yards a game and rushing for 135 yards a game, which is 305 yards a game, that's just not enough offense. And we've turned it over 8 times on offense.
Yeah, and if you look at the Rice game, what killed us was red zone. We had played pretty well in the red zone in limited trips, and then at the Rice game, we had multiple trips in the red zone, had to settle for field goals, and one time had it, you know, first and goal from the three, ended up coming away with no points.
Yep.
And then the other thing that's killing us is the penalties.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that's gotten a little better the last two games.
13 penalties per game average. 76 yards worth of penalties.
Yeah.
Well,
and we got to get we need more turnovers, too. We've only got 9 turnovers on defense, and they should have at least 15, so they're 6 short. And in my opinion, we're only scoring 21 points a game. We need to be scoring at least this day and time, at least 28 or 30.
And so we got a ways to go.
Turned it over 8 times, which that's not terrible, but it's where we turn it over at.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, key situations and games. No, you're exactly right. So you hope that. How much can you get done? You got an off week here. It's a little bit shorter off week because we play SMU on a Thursday night. But how much can you get done during an off week? Does it really make that much of a difference, you know, to have that extra practice time?
Well, I think the way you handle the off week is very, very important. Personally, our kids right now they're weary and they're tired. I would condition them, run them. I would probably give them, I would hope that they had Sunday. Well, Sunday, you know, should have been a light workout and a little bit of running. Maybe Monday, look at the film, but don't do anything. Tuesday, a little bit of running, but don't do anything. And then practice. I would practice Wednesday and Thursday, and I'd give them Friday and Saturday off. But, you know, if I was winning, I might do more. But losing, they probably need some time off. And every head coach does it different. And I respect Coach Houston. I think he's done you look at his record, where he's been. He started the hard way. You know, he came up as a high school coach, a small college coach. And I hope that he makes it. I hope he stays. You know, I hope they can get it turned around. And I looked at the schedule, and I honestly think that, you know, you're playing SMU at home. You're playing Charlotte at home. You're going to go to Texas and play San Antonio away. You got Tulsa at home. You got FAU away. FAU is 1-3. Navy is 1-3. And then you got Tulsa at home, and they're 3-2. I mean, if we could get it together, hell, maybe we can win. That's, how many games is that? 6-7 games? Hell, if we could win 6 of those games or all of them. I mean, it'd be a great year to finish up that way.
I would take 5 of them with the one win we got, get to 6-6 and be dancing the jig.
That'd be great. I mean, and you look at who we've played now. I mean, Michigan. You know, you play Michigan at Michigan. That's tough. And then Marshall's always good. And you had to, you know, that one. I don't know. I wish we'd have won that one. Appy State's always good. And you had to go to Appy State. That's a tough place to play. And then, you know, I honestly think right now we should be at least, you know, at least 3-2, but we're not. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. At very worst, 2-3. We should have won that Rice game. Let me ask you a quick question as we start to wrap this up. When we were in Conference USA, you could take non-qualifiers. The American doesn't allow that. How often did we actually do that when we were in CUSA? Did we take kids that were considered quote-unquote non-qualifiers?
We never took over 1 or 2 a year.
Okay. So you don't think that has a big impact? Because I look at Marshall and App, and I look at those schools in the Sun Belt that are allowed to do that, and I kind of wonder if that's the difference.
I really don't think it is. But it only takes one great one to change a program. You know,
right.
a great tailback, a great linebacker. But no, I really don't think. I think it's how you recruit kids that fit your program. And to me, the most important thing is just getting kids to love each other, play hard, togetherness to me. I look at some of, I was thinking about some of the things, you know, I've always told my kids, you know, yesterday's history, tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift from God. Make the best of it, you know, like today, practice. And then the three W's, you know, everybody wants to win.
Love each other so much.
But the point is, what are you willing to do? And that means work. So the three W's is you got to want to win, but what are you willing to do, which comes down to work. And I still believe it's a simple game. They got 11 and you got 11. And it's either a run or a pass.
Yep.
Absolutely. Stevie, you got anything else for Coach?
I think I got, that's about it. I mean, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
Well, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it, you know, being an old retired guy and getting a chance to just talk about football. It's just been a lot of fun.
Well, Coach, we enjoyed having you on, and we'd love to have you on again. And anytime you're welcome on the Sports Objective, your insight is fantastic. And, you know, we have some of your former players on from time to time, so maybe we'll be fun to get a former Rick Smith player and Rick Smith on together, and
that would be good.
that is something we may definitely do.
Well, I can't tell you how much I really enjoyed it, and you know, really appreciate you asking me to do it, and you remembered I'm still alive, and.
Coach, everybody. Look, if people in Greenville and the rest of Pirate Nation have forgotten Rick Smith, they might have some amnesia.
Well, thank you for that comment.
Yeah, no doubt. Coach,
really,
we appreciate you.
If you need anything from me, just holler.
All right, we'll do it, Coach. Thanks for coming on, and we'll catch you down the road.
I enjoyed it. Good luck to y'all. Okay.
All right, thank bye-bye. You. Thanks, Coach. Well, Stevie, we got an off week this week, so we got no Pirate football to preview with SMU.
You did North Carolina. You schedule a bye week. You move up in the top 25.
Well, you know, that's true. You remember when Ruffin, I don't remember what year it was. It was one of the good years because he was in a good mood.
Right.
And we had a bye week coming up, and he said, we're off this week. I think we'll beat off.
Yeah.
So, everybody in Pirate Nation, we're going to beat off this week. Oh, yeah. So, now we open date, got a short week after the open date. I kind of like that a little bit. So I'm sure the coaching staff would like it to be a true off week with the following game being on Saturday, but in a way you get an off week. You play on Thursday, then you get a little bit more time again before Sharp.
You got to look at it that way.
There is some positives to it.
It's all working out in the watch.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as we sit here and the Pirates don't have a game this week, you know, what are you going to do, Steve? You're going to watch other teams play football. In fact, there's some games on the night that I'm going to turn on as soon as we're done with this podcast. You got a couple Conference USA games that are on right now, Jacksonville State versus Middle Tennessee. And that's Rich Rodriguez in Jacksonville State in Middle Tennessee. And then, there's another one. New Mexico State and FIU. So people want to wear those games are on right now. But the reason everybody tunes in each and every week, Stevie, it's not for our guest. It's not for us to talk Pirate football. No. It is for our weekly top fives. And this week, it's always favorite. So this week is a little different. We did, with ECU being off, we ranked our top five favorite sports teams to watch besides East Carolina. These may be colleges. They may be pro teams. These are teams we enjoy watching besides East Carolina, because it's an off week. So I'll start it off, and I'm going to, as Dave would say, I'm going to pull Stevie. I have a tie for fifth place. Eastern Michigan. Yes, I'm being very serious. I love Chris Creighton. He's one of my favorite coaches. Eastern's struggling a little bit this year, but I always watch a lot of Eastern Michigan football. Also tied for fifth place, I have Louisiana Tech. I've always followed Louisiana Tech. Always enjoyed them, following them even more when Skip was there. I still follow them now. And this year, this is a new one. This is my tie for fifth, and this is my first year following them, but I started watching on week zero. One of my favorite coaches, Rich Rodriguez, is the head coach of Jacksonville State, their first year at FBS. They're 4-1. I need to check that score with Middle Tennessee. And they're very well coached. So this year I've been watching a lot of Jacksonville State, and that's primarily for Rich Rodriguez. So there you go. I started off number five. I got a three-way tie. Eastern Michigan, Louisiana Tech, and Jacksonville State. So now, what's your number five, Stevie?
My list is some that I've liked watching over the years. Maybe not so much this year, but some teams – that I've liked.
Yeah, and then that's kind of how it was with my tie there for fifth.
Yeah. So, you know, starting back at an early age, you know, as soon as I got old enough to know what a football was, I just started just like trying to learn everything about it. I mean, I knew my dad used to brag on me, this kid can tell you everything about the NFL, about college football. But one of the teams and I'm not going to give away what my number one is, but I think anybody that knows me knows what my number one's going to be. But one team that I gravitated to back in the day, just because they were so wide open, and they're still like that today, back then it was the San Diego Chargers with Air Coryell. You had Dan Fouts, a quarterback. You had, John Jefferson, Charlie Joyner, Kellen Winslow, and then James Brooks in the backfield with Chuck Muncy. It was a wide open offense. They never had any defense, and that's still true to this day. But the San Diego Chargers / Los Angeles Chargers now. I love watching the Chargers play.
And there's the score update. My Jacksonville State Gamecocks are trailing, but don't count Rich Rod and the boys out just yet. Number four. Growing up in Eastern North Carolina, you know, your regional sports team for baseball was the Baltimore Orioles. But, you know, I never knew that many people that were big Baltimore Orioles fans, unless you were just a big Cal Ripken Jr. fan. Everybody watched the Braves. I hated the Braves, Stevie, and I'll tell you why. Because they used to interrupt my WCW.
World Championship Wrestling.
Exactly. Yes. I'd go to turn on WCW Saturday night, and a damn Braves game would be on. Yeah. So who I did become a fan of was bored in the afternoons during the summertime, and I'd be flipping the channels and I'd hear this voice that was the worst broadcasting voice you'd ever hear. Hark, hurry, hurry, folks. So I became a Chicago Cubs fan because of Harry Carey, Ryan Sandberg, Mark Grace, Andre Dawson. So my number four is the Chicago Cubs.
That was on the other superstation back then, WGN.
Correct.
But, yeah, TBS and WGN were always the ones that you were watching for baseball. Okay, I'm going to stick with the Chicago, with my number four in Chicago. Back in the day, everybody was watching, unless you were a Pistons fan, Chicago Bulls basketball. I mean, you had Jordan, Pippen, Horace Grant in the early days, you know, Bill Cartwright, which, you know, I never understood the trade for Cartwright, but I guess it worked. The Bulls for what, 10 years straight, and just and seeing them finally get over the hump against the Pistons. Yeah, I was always watching Chicago Bulls basketball.
Yeah, I think we all watched the Bulls back then. I would watch the Bulls and the Hornets. But my number three, ladies and gentlemen, they're hot, hot, hot. Even though they beat us this year, I got a lot of respect for the boys in Boone. And it's my favorite part of the state. I love that area, the high country. One day I will live there. My number three, and no Pirate fans, don't get to worry. I'm not a closet App fan. I just respect them and happen to love where they're located. So my number three would be App State.
Okay, I can see that. All right. So my number three was sticking with the NFL, and I really had no choice in this matter, but, you know, when this team was the rest of my family pulled for this team. I was like the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, and just geographically.
Geographically, yeah.
Being in Virginia.
Virginia. There you go again. There you go again. the old Washington Redskins. I have so many great memories. My dad so many Sundays I hear him stomp around a house. There was one in particular, I think it was the 87 season. They were playing in divisional round against Chicago, and Chicago at Soldier Field, Chicago jumped all over them 10-0 early. And my dad was jumping around the house, just yelling, "This ball game's over. This ball game's over." And then not long later, Darryl Green takes a punt back for a touchdown, holding his rib that he had broke. They take the lead, and my dad jumping up and down, "New ball game. I knew they weren't out of this." So, you know, but yeah, watching the Redskins back in the day, that was always enjoyable for me, watching it with my dad and my mom. My mom was a diehard Redskins fan as well. Actually took her, one of her bucket lists was going to a Redskins game. So I got to take her to it. And man, you talking about somebody tearing up when she walked out on the field for the first time and saw all that green grass. She's like,
"I'm kind of like the dad and Rudy."
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, yeah. She came up that tunnel and looked out and she was like, "I never knew grass could be this green." I was like, "Oh, wow." So, yeah, that got to me a little bit. But, yeah, Redskins football, I'd say, was my number three.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a good story, Stevie. My number two is probably going to piss off some Pirate fans. But don't worry. It ain't Carolina or State. It ain't Duke either. My number two is one of our rivals. But you got to respect them. They beat us this year. And I love watching them play. I was cheering for them hard the other week when they beat Virginia Tech. And so I love watching the Marshall Thundering Herd. That's my number two.
Okay, my number two, you mentioned earlier. And, yes, I am a Cal Ripken Jr. fan. I got in with Orioles baseball in 1982 when he
– Well, Border State.
Yeah, when he came around. And I remember my cousin and my uncle went to a game, and my cousin came back just talking about he knocked one out of the park and blah, blah, and all this. And I was just like, you know, I gravitated. I think this was the last year Earl Weaver was there that I started really pulling for him. And I always got a kick out of Earl Weaver, how many times he would get kicked out in a year and the things he would say. You go back and look now on YouTube and the things he would say to some of the umpires. Yeah, he would have got kicked out. But, yeah, that 83 –
Well, they're pretty good this year.
They're number one seed in the AL. And 40 years later, after the last World Series win. So, you know, ironic. And they've got a rookie shortstop that's kicking butt, too. So, you know, maybe all the stars will line up for the Orioles this year. Well, I sure hope so. But, yeah.
You're gonna make the short drive to Camden Yards for a game?
No. When do I have time, Kyle? When do I have time? Football season. I'm at the end of football season.
True.
Work. You know, I will not be. That's on my bucket list, though. Camden Yards. But yeah, Orioles baseball number two for me.
I've seen Camden Yards, but I've never gone to a game there.
You rode by it?
Yeah. All right, my number one. If you know me, this will not be a surprise. Stevie, you may not know this about me, though, but a lot of people will know who my number one is. If East Carolina didn't have a football team, this would be my college football team, and it's our oldest rival, actually. But I love the school. Some of my best friends, I've made so many friends associated with the school. In fact, Stevie, you don't know this humor part of the podcast. Then we scooped the John Gilbert hire. About 2 weeks before anybody else did.
I do remember what happened when y'all did that.
You remember that?
Yeah, I was following you guys back then.
Yeah, because I had so many ties at the school, Southern Miss. And so I had my ties down there, let me know that their AD was headed our way. And USM, I love Southern Miss. Respect them as a football program. Very similar tradition to us.
Exactly.
I miss playing them. Some of my best friends are Southern Miss people. So, like I said, I got a lot of love for the Golden Eagles. They're 1-4, just like we are this year. Those parallels just always seem to run. Only they can score points. They just can't stop anybody. If you combine the two football teams, you'd have one hell of a team. Imagine that being the other one. You remember, imagine who would ever thought Southern Miss could score, East Carolina can't. East Carolina can play defense, Southern Miss can't. Who would have thunk it?
combine the two, see what happens.
And exactly.
We actually, I don't know if you heard about this, but one of the years I coached, we actually combined with a rival school for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Because both of us didn't have enough to make a team, or barely enough. So we combined, and at 2 out of 3 years, we got state championships out of it.
So, nice. So maybe y'all should have kept doing it.
Yeah, but you know, they went charter.
Okay.
So we weren't able to do that anymore. My number one, anybody that knows me knows who my number one team is.
And the Baltimore Ravens.
Yes. How did you guess? actually, you saw Keaton come off the injured list, right?
I did, yeah.
So, hopefully he won't play this Sunday, though. That's the Steelers-Ravens game. But, Pittsburgh Steelers, ever since I was, like I said, old enough to know what football was, I always gravitated him. I guess it was because of Terry Bradshaw, but my favorite Steeler of all time is Jack Ham. And, you know, one of the greatest linebackers of all time that doesn't really get talked about a whole lot. Because he played, you know, he played with Jack Lambert, but he could do it all. But yeah, I don't know what it was. Me and my cousin, we're like 2 weeks apart in age, and both of us went against the grain. We were the black sheep of the family. We pulled for the Steelers, and the rest of them pulled for the Redskins. So we were out in the yard. You remember? I don't know if you remember you because I'm a little bit older than you. I think. How old are you, Kyle?
40. How old am I? 43. Wait a minute. Hold on. I'll be 43 this month. I'll be 43 later
your
this
birthday?
Month. The 13th.
Okay, because mine's the 16th of this month. So,
I literally just had this conversation with Bubba about they claim that September has the most birthdays, and I call BS on that.
October.
Because I know more October birthdays than anything.
Hey, I had four. When I was a kid, it was four in my family. Five.
I know my mom, my nephew, and I got friends. The amount of October birthdays I know. It's number two. September's number one. October's number two. March's number three. Don't ask me why I know this, but I really believe October's number one. In the South, I can confirm October has to be number one.
I don't know what was going on. Let me see. What was 9 months?
The end of December, January. New Year's. Yeah.
But, you know, we were always like – we would always get stuff, Steelers stuff. We actually got a mini Steelers locker, and it had the old Sears jerseys in there where you ironed on the number and your last name up there.
Nice.
I actually still have the helmet from back then. It's got some wear on it because it's about I'll be 50 this month, so that's been about 40 years of wear.
I remember those. I remember my cousin getting the Cowboys version of that in the mid 80s, I guess it would have been.
Yeah, let me tell you though, we decided to get out there.
How old were you? See, how old are you, Steve? You early 50s?
I'll get ready to turn 50.
Okay, all right.
I'll be 50 in 12 days. So,
okay.
But yeah, we decided to get out there. We didn't get the white jersey. They didn't offer you the away jersey. They just offered you the black. So, summertime, we decided to get out there in the yard in all black. And let me tell you, that was my first experience with one. You don't want to wear black when it's blazing heat in the summertime. You don't want to do that. So, but yeah, I still have that jersey around here somewhere too. I'll have to get it out. But yeah, Steelers are definitely number one for me. It always will be. I mean, everybody's like, oh, y'all suck this year. Yeah, but guess what? I stayed with them after Bradshaw left, and we struggled all through the years with quarterbacks like Neil O'Donnell, Bubby Brister, Mark Malone. Let's see. Actually, you remember Cliff Stout was actually a backup, and he started some for the Steelers. Didn't Cliff Stout used to work for the ECU?
Yes. He used to do television games on the Power Sports Television Network.
Yeah.
With Jeff Charles. And at some point, I'd like to get Cliff on the show.
I would love to get Cliff Stout up here.
Yeah, for two different reasons. I'm sure you'd like to talk Pittsburgh Steelers with him. I'd like to talk to him about his memories of calling games for East Carolina.
Yeah.
But I always enjoyed Cliff. I thought him and Jeff did I thought they did a great job together.
But yeah, Steelers are my number one.
There you go. There's our top five. The reason everybody tuned in so everybody can tune out now. And, you know, that's it. No game this week, Stevie, so there will be no Pirate playback. Right. I'm assuming we will not have a power play back on Sunday night. Tuesday, we will have the Pirate preview. You know, Monday night, you got next week. Yeah, Monday night, you got Jeff Connors with Absolute Empowerment. I'm not sure who his guest will be this coming up week, but you can go in our archives. This past Monday night, he talked to Holt Naylor. So if you hadn't had a chance to listen to that, go back and listen to it. And, you know, we watching a lot of football, waiting for Thursday night. And then hopefully the Pirates can pull off the big upset as we have an ACC team from Dallas, Texas, coming to Greenville.
Yep. And, ACC team.
Do what?
A newly crowned ACC.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you what, if that can't get you fired up, I don't care how we're playing. To see SMU get in the ACC, and now they're coming to Greenville. You know the commissioner of the ACC is probably going to be in town to welcome them in. You're probably going to have other you know, people from other in-state ACC schools here on a Thursday night because they're not going to be playing. So, you know, we got to do on ESPN, we got to pull the upset. And we got to beat the Mustangs when they come to Greenville next Thursday. And you want to turn this season around, and you want to turn frowns upside down. You want to turn this season around fast. Go beat SMU and Charlotte back to back weeks.
Exactly. First of all, if you can't get fired up for, you know, this ACC stuff, then you know
you ain't beat East Carolina.
Yeah, something's wrong. And then you know, with all these, like you said, all these eyes on them. That would be, like you said, the ultimate wake-up call right there would be ECU upset to SMU.
Exactly. It'd be the way to turn the season around in a hurry. So we'll see what happens. But, Stevie, unless you got something else, we'll close it out.
I ask you this. Did you get to see Colorado and USC last week?
I watched a little bit of it. I saw, USC blow the lead. Colorado start coming back on them. So I watched some of it. Didn't watch all of it. I'm about Deion Sanders out. I'm glad to see Lincoln and USC hold on to win the football game. But much respect to Colorado. I say I'm Deion Sanders out because I'm sick of hearing about him. But, you know, that was a respectable performance by Colorado against a playoff contending USC team.
I got a question for you, and maybe it's just me, but I don't think it is. And I love Lincoln Riley, love him. Why is it that it seems like everywhere he goes since he's took head coaching job, defense is suspect?
Well, Captain Bill would tell you it's because Lincoln Riley sucks. But I think it's just the offense here, huh? It's hard to have a good defense with that offense. You know, maybe somebody ought to give Rick Smith a call. Rick managed to do it.
I was going to say that tonight. Maybe I was going to tell him maybe you need to head down there to USC and start working with his defense.
Well, you know what Rick Smith did, if I remember, you know, and I wish he was still on. We could ask him about it, but. Rick was very basic. It was a base 4-3 defense,
right.
And he played really good zone coverage when he was here under Lincoln Riley. And your mindset is complementary football. If you have a high scoring, fast paced football team, you want a football team that's aggressive on defense and blitzes and all. But Rick Smith's football teams, his defense has always forced a lot of turnovers by playing good in the back end, good zone coverage.
Right.
You know, they didn't force a lot of turnovers by exotic blitz packages. It was from proper technique and tackling and playing really good in the back end in zone coverage. And so it was complementary football in terms of forcing turnovers and, you know, getting the ball back to the offense, but not very aggressive. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, I couldn't tell you what USC is really doing on defense. I hadn't watched them enough. Are they very aggressive on defense? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, I didn't get to see much of it because I was at work, but I just kept seeing the updates on my phone. So, but they're out. I mean, even when he was out of Oklahoma, they didn't seem like they were very aggressive on defense there. And they had a habit of blowing leads too. But you know, I just wondered, just something that crossed my mind after that game because I was like,
Mike Leach had the same problems for years. Yeah. Really.
And
when it finally ended? When he hired Ruffin McNeil.
Yeah.
So, go figure.
Maybe Ruffin needs to go to USC.
anything to get him to hell out. Well, he's going to stay in Raleigh until his dad passes. And if that's already happened, then I don't know about it. I apologize, but I know that's why he went back to Raleigh, because of his dad's health. And, so, you know, I can respect that.
I totally understand that.
Yep. All right, Stevie. Well, we're gonna wrap this thing up, and we will you know, stay tuned, like I said, for all the other programs that I've already mentioned. I'm not gonna mention it again. And we will be back with you, as far as I know. The next time that we will be doing a show will be Monday night for Jeff Connors for Absolute Empowerment. So for Dave Richmond producing, Rick Smith is our guest, and for Stevie Fly, I'm Kyle Barber. You have been listening and watching The Sports Objective, just another sports podcast. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
See you.